six, coastal commercial Dungeness crab rules, and this is a decision. Heather Reed, Coastal Marine Policy Coordinator. Don't see Deputy Chief Sensi, but I'm sure you'll cover those topics well. Welcome.
Yeah, I was just talking to Tina about Mike, so he's not here, but we'll be fine. So, as Chair Wecker mentioned, this is a follow-up to the briefing that I presented to the Commission in November. I see my title's wrong here. It should say adoption. But I'm going over proposed changes to coastal Dungeness crab rules. And the reason for these changes are to improve the intent and enforceability of existing regulations, allow for a consistent season opening with Oregon, minimize lost or derelict crab gear, and improve safety for the coastal Dungeness crab fishery. All of the proposed changes are within three WACs, and I'll just run through them quickly. WAC 2052 includes a rule that would streamline the season opening date. Right now, our rule is written so that the season is open on December 1, and this revision would take out the December 1 date. Oftentimes, we delay the season if crab haven't fully recovered from the molt period or for other reasons, and this really just keeps us from having to do an emergency rule when that happens. There are other things that are tied to a December 1 opening date, and this would streamline the rule process. I do want to mention that there has been some comment, and they weren't provided during the public comment period, but I have heard from folks that, or at least one or two, that there is some concern with removing the December 1 opening as written in the rule. And I want to explain that we are not changing the target of a December 1 opening date. We have pretty stringent preseason testing protocols that we've worked with Oregon and California to develop through the Tri-State Dungeness Crab Committee. And those testing protocols are designed for a December 1 opening date. So by taking it out of the rule, it doesn't weaken that we are going to attempt to open on December 1 if the crab are ready. Also within 2052.045 is a provision that would establish a gear tending requirement. What that does is during the period from May to September 15th, the summer period just before the end of the season, this would require gear to be tended every 21 days or about 3 weeks. And what we've run across the last few years is folks moving on. This time of year, the fishing effort is really low. Folks move on to participate in other fisheries. A few will leave their gear in the water unattended during that time period. And what happens, we found, this is where Mike might be helpful, but I'll do my best to explain. We found other people fishing those crab gear, either without the owner knowing, or we think sometimes when the owner knows, they have something of an agreement that while I'm gone, go ahead and fish these, and so which is unlawful by our regulations to fish someone else's gear. What this gear tending requirement does is it gives our enforcement officers the ability to enforce that unlawful activity, which they didn't have before. We've worked with the crab industry and our advisory board to come up with the right time period, so May through September, and the 21 days. So Oregon has a similar rule that's in place for their entire season, and their gear tending period is 2 weeks. Ours was, we really wanted to focus on the time period when it was a problem. We didn't want to put in a rule that would just create an opportunity for someone to be worried that they might run into some weather that would, you know, prohibit them from getting out and tending their care during that time period. So that's the basis for the time and the shortened period. Also within 2252045 is a change that would revise the preseason care set period. So right now and for many years, prior to the season opening, which is so an area of our fishery opened on December 1 this year, and typically on November 28th or 64 hours in advance of that December 1 opener, the fleet has the ability to take their pots out. They're not fishing, but they're setting gear. And this revision would change that gear set period from 64 hours in advance of the opening to 73. This is something that we've worked through the Tri-State Committee on. Oregon actually brought it to the table a couple of years ago. We discussed with Oregon and California changing that. What it in essence does, the season will still open on December 1, but it will open at 9 a.m. in daylight rather than at midnight. And that will improve enforceability. It will give our enforcement officers the opportunity to see folks and jumping that December 1 opener rather than at 9 a.m. rather than at midnight. We also think it will improve safety as well. So the changes in WAC 2252042 would modify the replacement buoy tag period and limit. Our pot limit is enforced through a buoy tag. And so each license owner gets either 500 or 300 based on their historical catch buoy tags at the beginning of the year. We have a replacement tag program that allows them to get replacement tags if a pot is lost during the season. Right now, fishermen can get up to 15% of their original allotment throughout the year, and they're staggered, so you can get a certain amount as the season progresses. This change would reduce that from 15% to 10%, and it would back up the date that you can get replacement tags. So right now, under our current rules, you could get replacement tags the day the season opens. This rule would back it up so you couldn't get your first replacement tag for 15 days. We think that's an improvement because it will give folks time to maybe find a lost pot. Take a look around. Things are really hectic. There's a lot of stuff going on, so maybe they're going to find a pot before they come right in and get a replacement tag. And then they'll still be able to get them during these staggered time periods and just 10% less. There has been a lot of interest in us continuing this discussion on replacement tags. Over the last year, we've had increasing support for actually eliminating the replacement tag program altogether. And so our plan is to reach out and gather more input during this season, and I may be back next year to say we have support for just eliminating it. So what that would do is folks would get 500 or their 300 buoy tags at the beginning of the year. Those are their tags. They manage them, and they don't come in and get replacement tags. We not every fisherman gets replacement tags. Only a percentage of the fleet does. So we'll keep looking into that as the year goes on.
Heather, and, sure. Who is behind the proposal to just completely eliminate replacement tags?
Crab fishermen, our industry folks.
They're the ones. Themselves. And yeah. So explain to me again what their rationale is. They don't.
Like I said, there's just a portion of the fleet that actually gets and uses mm-hmm. replacement tags. And kind of by area. So more of our fishermen down the Columbia River get replacement tags than our fishermen that fish up north. And there's a lot of reasons for that. That's a high traffic area at the Columbia River, that sort of thing. But as time goes on, has gone on with this program, they've just seen that there isn't a strong need for it. And they also start their season with a reduced pot limit until the area north of Clipson opens. So in essence, during that real busy period, they actually have replacement tags by way of their 100 tags that aren't being used. So they have said, you know, this is just complicated, and We don't need them. It's been a debate since we implemented the pot limit and the replacement tag program, whether or not we need it. So I think the time has just come for us to take a little step back.
Commissioner Kehoe.
Yes, thanks, Madam Chair. Is it your experience that you tend to see kind of repeat applicants for these replacement tags kind of every year? They just happen to lose their gear more often than others? Is that kind of the concern?
That's exactly right. Okay. That's true.
Very polite way of asking that question. Commissioner Schmitten.
Thank you, Chair, and hi, Heather.
Hi, Ali.
Will this have any bearing or effect on the lost gear retrieval? Will pots still be identified? Because that during the season, I know a lot of vessels go out and pull gear that have been lost and retrieved. If it's tagged, the owner can reclaim it. Will this change that in any way?
Thank you for the question. This will not. So each pot will still have a tag.
Okay.
And they'll still have their buoy tag. They just won't have the opportunity to get
to
50 more or 75 more. Right.
Okay. Sorry.
So the last change we're proposing is a modification to our logbook requirement. As our rule is currently written, we've discovered that our rule is written for crab caught off the coast of Washington, Columbia River, Willapa Bay, Grace Harbor. And what that does is it omits a requirement for a logbook to be submitted if the crab is caught off Oregon and delivered into Washington. So right now we have not a complete logbook summary of crab that are landed into Washington. This rule would also mirror Oregon's rule by changing it to all crab delivered into Washington would need to have a logbook submitted. Oregon's rule is also written so that all crab delivered into Oregon, regardless of where it's caught, is covered by a logbook. So this just corrects that omission. So we did have a public hearing November 25th. No one attended the public hearing, but I did get one email with some comments that I responded to, and they're included in your summary sheet. I've addressed a fair amount of the comments that were provided in that email just in my overview, but I can run through these two or ask if you have any questions on that. I'll just run through quickly. So the first comment was regarding the opening date and in terms of taking out the December 1, and I basically just explained in my response that this is really not backing away from the December opening date, but just removing that date from the rule. So we're still targeting a December 1 opener. And then leaving the opening at the end of the season is difficult. We're already, you know, we have a summer management plan to address the fact that the crab molt period is variable and when it occurs throughout the year. And at times in September, we could be seeing crab that are beginning to molt. So a September 15th hard closing date is important to protect those molting crab. The next comment is regarding the buoy tags, and I think his comment was about that they do little to help regulate the number of pots issued by an individual, but it actually, when we first implemented the pot limit, industry wasn't ready to go the next step and have buoy tags. So we had for a couple of years a pot limit with no buoy tags. So what that meant was our enforcement officers had to go out and count each pot in the ocean in December, January, and February till they found pot number 501 or 305 that was over a limit. What the buoy tag does is it gives enforcement staff a tool to just find a pot without a tag, which is a lot easier. And actually, we did hear from our industry a couple years after the tags that we're willing to pay for these tags. They're we really need them to enforce the pot limit. So is there anything else? And then he speaks to the replacement tags and why more pots are allowed throughout the season. And I think through the change we're proposing here, we're addressing that a little bit. And then in my comment back to Mr. Davis, explained that we'll seek out more input from industry and if need be, eliminate the replacement tags altogether. And then regarding logbooks, we do have small boat fishermen, and Mr. Davis fishes in the Willpaw Bay. So there's often small boats. Filling out a logbook during the day as you're fishing can be difficult. As we discussed a logbook program, you know, we wanted it to be something that wasn't duplicative of what we understand a lot of fishermen do already, and that is record where they're fishing and what they're catching and how much. So we have a logbook that allows a copy to be kept, and certainly hope that if you're not in putting your logbook information in as you're fishing, you're doing it at the end of the day when it's maybe more safe or that sort of a thing. Logbooks have been extremely valuable to us. We originally implemented them to get a better understanding of our catch relative to our co-managed areas, and in particular, our northern catch management area, Area 59A1 off our north coast. Within that catch area, so the catch would be recorded on a fish ticket as that area, we have an overlapping UNA for the Macaulay and Quileute tribes. We were interested in understanding better is what proportion of our catch in Area 59A is coming from the Macaw versus the Quileute UNA. We couldn't get to that without a logbook, so it's been really valuable to us in that regard. And then at the same time, we also are working on sediment management issues in the Columbia River from dredging and disposal of dredge materials. And there's a lot of interest in depositing dredge materials in the nearshore environment. And that's important to get the sand back into the system and rebuild erosion issues. But what we need to know when we're considering where in the nearshore is, where is the crab resource? And this logbook data at least lets us see where our fishing effort is concentrated. And so it's been a valuable tool, and I understand that some folks it's hard, but we also have some really incredible staff in Montesano that have been really willing to work one-on-one with anybody who's having problems filling out logbooks. So we'll continue to do that.
Heather, is that information confidential?
Logbook data?
Yeah.
Yes.
It is.
The next comment is regarding the gear tending requirement, and I think there's some concern that we're putting in a rule that might put an unnecessary burden on somebody or put them in a situation where they couldn't get out and tend their gear. There's an unexpected circumstance, and we really didn't want to create a rule like that. We don't want to create a rule that's just, a opportunity for a ticket. We really just wanted to target on this small group of small situation that's happening in the summer. So as I mentioned in my response, you know, the first line of defense is really call us. And our enforcement staff and Sergeant Dan Chadwick, his phone number is on every industry notice we send. And if it's not in most of our crabbers' phones already, they know how to get a hold of him. And I think our intent is not to overburden our fishermen with this rule, but really to provide some way to get at this situation in the summer. This next comment is about the gear set period. There are members of our industry that don't believe we need a preseason gear set period. As I mentioned, this really, the rule was implemented as a safety issue. It allows small boats and large boats to all get their gear in the water in November and December when the weather can be rough and have a fair opportunity to start their season. There's also a rule that allows a smaller boat to hire another vessel that's not designated on a crab license to haul their gear if need be. Some people don't see the need for it. We really did feel that the rule was a safety, an improvement to safety and enforceability of the season opening. And then regarding whether or not there should be a gear recovery period, you know, the situation's a little bit different in September. There's, first of all, not nearly the amount of gear still left on the ground fishing in September. The weather's often better, and it's just a lot easier to get the crab gear in. We're also often backing up into the molt period, so the need is just a lot different. So a gear recovery period, I suppose we could close the season 73 or 64 hours in advance and then let folks bring it in, but the need just hasn't been that strong for anything like that. And then Mr. Davis wanted to see a cost-benefit analysis, and I pointed out the small business economic impact statement that explains that these should not increase costs to the fishermen. They're really rules that are already there. They're not significantly changing or creating new requirements. So if you have any questions, okay, I'd be happy to answer them.
Good job. Thank you. Thank you. Commissioner Keeney?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Heather. I think I understand most of that. The one part up front that I was unclear on is that the season, I understand the reason, the season would be closed except as provided by emergency rule. So does that come to the commission as an emergency rule? No. Okay.
Go ahead. Madam Chair, no, it doesn't. Sorry, I took your shaking of your head as no, it doesn't. You're right.
Okay, that's just department sets the rule.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
The director sets the emergency rules. Any other questions for Heather? Director Anderson?
2 points. On the December 1st opening date, we have been talking amongst industry as well as with Oregon about the potential of moving December 1 that hard, to that goal of December 1 to a later date like December 15th for, I don't know, at least 3 years, maybe five, probably five, seeing how I remember it. So in the description of that issue, I didn't want to leave the commission with the impression that we haven't been talking about an alternative date. And one of the primary reasons we've been discussing that with industry as well as with our colleagues in Oregon is that December 1 generally is pushing right up to when the crab condition is such that they're ready for harvest. So you've got this relatively intense work going on in November of testing and ascertaining the meat pickout rates and to ensure that they meet the threshold. And so by moving it to December 15th, you'd have a greater number of years where you weren't pushing the limit. So, you know, is it 22.9 or 23.1? So we have been talking about that. That's obviously not in this rule, but if that were to come back to you at some future date, I'm sure you'll remember this, of course, that we talked about this, but that might come back. The other comment I had was, you know, there's a huge diversity of interests and strategies within the crab fishing industry, and the fact that you could bring a rule like this to this body, both at the November meeting and today, and not have anybody here, is a statement to how much work Heather's done to bring these rules. She has worked really hard with industry to get people behind this to all come around and come forward with a common approach, common solution. So kudos to Heather.
Kudos to Heather. Thank you for not bringing controversy to us. Okay. Any other questions, clarifications? because I am somewhat of an observer of the crab industry, my impression was a lot of the crab are harvested before Christmas because it's a big market and big demand, higher demand during Christmas. So is this going to give them, I mean, if we ask for it to be later, opened later, does that conflict with the Christmas harvest?
So we align our opening date south of Clipson Beach, which is eight miles north of the Columbia River, I think that's right, with Oregon, so that we have a common opening below Clipson Beach. And that really is where this December 1, December 10, whatever it is, that's where this really applies. North of there, all the way up to the U.S.-Canada border, we have aligned, because the tribal UNAs stop at Grace Harbor, so you got between Grace Harbor and Clipson Beach, which is about 18 miles, but drawing a line at Grace Harbor didn't make a lot of, well, some would argue it does, but we have elected to manage the area from Clipson Beach all the way north to the balance of our coastline in a manner that's consistent, so that the rules that we have in place to meet our sharing obligations under USV Washington with the tribes north of Grace Harbor, from a season timing perspective, are aligned. And so, like this year, it opens on January 3rd. Last year, it was like January 15th. So we are after, my point is, we're well after the so-called the Christmas market, not so-called, there is a Christmas market. But what we have found in, I think, all years except one, is that the price per pound that our fishermen are getting by opening later, after that initial flood of crab from California and Oregon, they're getting more per pound. So you got two things going on. The crab are in better shape because you're waiting longer. They're filled out completely, and a lot of times the pickout rates are 25% instead of 23%. And they're getting more, they're getting a higher price per pound. So the angst within industry about waiting until January 1 or January 10 to open our fishery for the majority of our coast has really subsided, because what they have seen is that by staggering the opening, staggering the product supply, they end up getting more money. So yes, there's a Christmas demand. Yes, if you delay, it's been a long time since we haven't opened before Christmas off Oregon and up to our Clipson line. So that's generally always taken care of. But one of the outcomes of managing under our state tribal agreements has been this later start, which has produced a higher value. And in the area between Grace Harbor and Clipson, there's no tribal fishery. So that's, I mean, it's not like they've had any crab pulled off the ground. So I don't know.
Okay. Interesting. That's good. Win-win. Okay. Any further? Okay. Then we are ready for a motion. Commissioner Smith.
Thank you. I move that the Fish and Wildlife Commission adopt the proposed changes to WAC 220-52041, WAC 220-52042, and WAC 220-52045 as proposed by department staff.
Do I hear a second? Commissioner Mankin seconded the motion to adopt the proposed changes to WAC 220-52041, WAC 220-52042, and WAC 220-52045 as proposed by department staff. Further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Say no. Motion carries. Great job, Heather. Very nice.